This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up earlier this week, President Trump signed an executive order sending a large part of President Obama's global warming effort up in smoke. Administrator of the Environmental Protection Agency, Scott Pruitt, is here to talk about President Trump's energy independence plan a little bit later. Also, the North Carolina legislature replaced HB2 earlier today with HB2 Light. LGBT agitators who pushed for the repeal of HB2, the privacy bill that the legislature passed there, are furious at the repeal, which quite frankly reveals their definition of compromise is nothing more than total surrender from those who oppose their radical agenda. Former North Carolina Governor Pat McCrory joins me later here on Washington Watch. And a state senator in Illinois has introduced legislation that would require pastors to undergo state training within 1 year of taking a ministry post and every 5 years thereafter. David Smith, executive director of the Illinois Family Institute, is here to explain. Also today, Mike Pence, Vice President Mike Pence, is earning his pay, running back and forth from the White House to the Capitol. Today, he voted to break a tie on Title 10 funding in the Senate, which would allow states to defund Planned Parenthood. This is one of those rules that the outgoing administration put in place that actually restricted states from defunding Planned Parenthood. He had to vote earlier this morning to break the tie to proceed to the bill, and then had to vote this afternoon just moments ago to, in fact, allow this to pass and go on to the president's desk for signature. And another pro-life piece of legislation coming out of this Congress, so we'll celebrate that when the president signs it. But I want to talk first about what the president did earlier this week. On Tuesday, President Trump signed an executive order reversing most of the Obama-era environmental and global warming regulations, saying it will help create jobs and move America toward energy independence. With us now to tell us how that's going to happen is the new administrator of the Environmental Protection Agency, Scott Pruitt. Scott, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony, how are you?
Good. Have you settled into the new spot yet?
Oh, I think settled might be we're getting settled. Let's just say that.
Well, you got a lot of work to do, and I think yesterday or earlier this week, a lot of activity there as the president came over to sign his executive order. Tell our listeners what the executive order would do.
Well, I think you described it very, very well, Tony. Energy independence is what the focus of the executive order addressed, and it dealt not just with coal, but also oil and gas, fossil fuels generally. The opportunity we have as a country to develop resources. I mean, the last administration, as you know, Tony, had an approach of keeping fossil fuels in the ground and had a war on coal that the president announced on Tuesday had ended. And now the steps have begun here at the EPA to undo the rules that have been passed over the last few years that were not within the framework of the Clean Air Act and other environmental statutes, and really cleaning up that process and getting a path forward that recognizes we can be pro-growth, pro-jobs, and pro-environment. And it's an exciting time. We had, for the first time, well, I shouldn't say the first time, Tony, but I'm sure perhaps the first time, at the press conference announcing the executive order, we had coal miners in attendance. I know it was their first time here, because I asked them directly, and they were very emotional about this war on coal, the regulatory assault that they've endured the last several years, that it's ended.
I imagine
there's hope and optimism.
I imagine, given what they've experienced in the last 8 years, they were probably wearing their hard hats when they came into the EPA.
Yeah, that's they were very emotional, actually. You could see that they were very, I think, appreciative of the president's leadership and what he did to send the signal that it's wrong for government to declare a war on any sector of their economy. And 411-plus coal generation facilities across the country were shut down during the Obama administration. That means higher electricity costs for consumers. Mm-hmm. That means less reliability on the power grid and less jobs that occurred during that time frame in the energy sector. And all that was changed on Tuesday.
Well, and that disproportionately hurts the lower class, those who have to pay a larger percentage of their annual income into energy. That hurts them when energy prices go up.
It does, and I think what's wrong is over the last several years, utility companies, as they generate electricity, they ought to be able to make decisions based upon reliability, the stability of the grid, and cost. They ought to be able to draw from a variety of fuel sources, a fuel diversity, if you will, coal, natural gas, oil, renewables, solar, hydro, the rest. All those things should be used by utility companies. Government shouldn't come into the marketplace and tell them which ones are proper and which ones aren't. And that's what's happened over the last several years. There was an attitude that says, don't choose coal, don't choose fossil fuels. You know, up until the last few years, Tony, coal generation, it was around 40% of our electricity generation in this country. It's now down around 31-32%. And so this war on coal was real. It cost jobs in West Virginia, Ohio, Pennsylvania, regions across the country that literally the government had put them within the crosshairs. So it was a very important day for America, a very important day for energy independence, and a very important day to say that regulators no more are going to be picking winners and losers. We're going to do what's fair and equitable for all as we allow energy to be developed in this country.
Well, and Scott Pruitt, there is an element of this as a national security issue. As we are dependent on foreign sources of energy, we are increasingly in a hostile world, finding ourselves at a point where that energy supply could be cut off.
Yes, I mean, when you look at our reliability upon foreign oil, it's actually less than what it was a few years ago, as you know, but it's still, you know, roughly 20-25% or so, 25-26%. That's less than what it's been over the last several years. But at the same time, why do we have regulation and policies in place preventing the Dakota Access Pipeline, the Keystone Pipeline? You know, the ability to develop our resources, oil, natural gas, and coal. I mean, all those things seem to me to be not within the purview of government. Government ought not be preventing that. It ought to be setting standards that can be met to ensure clean air and clean water, and then let markets determine, you know, which energy sources we use to generate electricity. So it's a new day, a new attitude. There's hope and optimism for the first time in a long time in the energy sector. We have tremendous opportunity, and I think people are very excited about it.
Now, not everybody was excited about it, Scott. You had some Democratic-led states and local governments issued a statement saying that they would oppose the new regulations and the executive order in court, which I actually found somewhat comical, because what the president, as I understand it, is doing is simply undoing the executive order that was done by President Obama, which is in the purview of the executive.
Well, what's interesting about it is that the Clean Power Plan, which was the subject of the executive order that was introduced as a rule by the EPA in 2015, is the subject of a U.S. Supreme Court stay. And you don't get a stay of enforcement of a rule unless there's a likelihood of success, meaning that the law is unlawful. And so what the president's actually doing is recognizing what the courts have already recognized, that the steps that were taken by the previous administration weren't consistent with their authority. And why we should continue to spend resources on advancing something that the Supreme Court has said is likely deficient doesn't do anything to improve air quality in this country and provides great uncertainty in the marketplace. So that's why this is very important. We now have sent a message that we're going to fix that problem.
Right.
The Clean Power Plan that's been declared, you know, likely unlawful by the U.S. Supreme Court is going to go away, and then we're going to take steps going forward that are within the authority of this agency and the framework that Congress has adopted. I mean, Tony, you and I have talked about this in the past. I mean, the executive branch, the agencies that make up the president's cabinet, the EPA being obviously the one we're talking about today, we only possess the authority that Congress gives us.
Right.
We can't go in and reimagine a statute or fill in, pinch hit, and do things that Congress has not allowed us to do. And so this agency twice has tried to regulate carbon. It tried to regulate carbon with the tailoring rule, CO2, and that was struck down in the UARG decision by the U.S. Supreme Court. And secondly, the Clean Power Plan was introduced in 2015. And again, the U.S. Supreme Court entered in and said, no, it's likely unlawful. We're going to issue a stay. So the agency's 0 for 2. They're batting zero as we head into baseball season. And the question is asked, should be asked, are the tools in the toolbox? You know, has Congress actually given this agency the authority, the
right
tools, to deal with greenhouse gases and CO2 in the way that many think should occur? And I think that's a very fair and fundamental question that should be asked and answered. It's not something the past administration cared about. They actually talked about that as they went through the rulemaking and enlarged their authority in the statute, and that's why it was struck down. So the president is making a difference here to say, look, that's not the right way. We're going to set a better course going forward.
And his actions are within the scope of his role as the chief executive.
That's
He's
exactly
not gone
right
beyond those limits. Administrator Pruitt, let me ask you one other question. Well, actually, I got two questions. But one is, this executive order, although dealing with a large part of the agenda that the administration of President Obama had in terms of their climate change, global warming, this does not address the Paris Accord, which is something the president also got the country entangled in. Is that something that we'll see addressed going forward?
Well, the Paris Accord, as you know, is not enforceable in the sense that it's not a treaty. And that's one of the criticisms that was levied at the time, that as Secretary Kerry was in Paris and as the EPA was in Paris, as the previous administration was negotiating the Paris Accord, if the previous administration intended for it to be enforceable, to be substantive and create obligations of the United States of America, it had to be a treaty. And they just disregarded that. But beyond that, Tony, when you look at Paris, it was just a bad deal for this country.
Yes.
When you look at the discussion, because the discussion that ensued was that China and India would take no steps to address CO2 until after the year 2030, while this country front-loaded all of our costs through efforts like the Clean Power Plan, costing us jobs and contracting our economy. That's not an America First strategy. You know, we've talked about an America First strategy the president has with respect to the border and immigration and national security and trade and all those issues. Well, clearly, the Paris Accord, in my view, put America's interest second. China and India's interests were ahead of this country. So it is something that is not a good deal for this country. It's not enforceable, but it's something that needs to be, I think, clarified as far as the direction as we go forward. That's not the approach we're going to take in the future. America's interests are going to be first. Jobs are going to be first, and clean air and clean water here. Just a quick, you know, statistic. We're at pre-1994 levels right now for CO2. So we are already doing better than most places in the world. We're
right
growing our economy, and we're also at pre-1994 levels on greenhouse gases. Why? Because of innovation and technology. Horizontal drilling combined with hydraulic fracturing has allowed the conversion of coal generation to natural gas. That's one reason. And so we've seen cleaner energy being achieved and coal technology that allows us to also produce electricity in a cleaner fashion. And so we're doing it better than anybody in the world. While we put our interest second, you know, at Paris, doesn't make any sense.
Right. And what we're doing now, this path is good for families all across America. Scott, we're out of time. I want to thank you for joining us, but I do want to get you back on because I've got a lot more questions for you. I'm excited about the prospects there at the EPA, and I know a lot of small business owners are as well. Thanks so much for taking time out of a busy schedule.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. Scott Pruitt, the new administrator of the EPA. Good guy, former Attorney General of Oklahoma. All right, when we come back, the former governor of North Carolina joins us to talk about what took place in North Carolina today. Don't go away. We're back with lots more Washington Watch right after this.
The love of one's country, that's what patriotism is, according to Noah Webster, you know, the dictionary guy. Well, we're going to be being patriots when we go to Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon in September. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. September 20th through the 24th, we're going to be seeing our nation's capital. We've taken thousands of people over the years to do this, and people sometimes come back for a second and third time. We're going to be seeing our nation's capital from a distinctively Christian perspective with historian Stephen McDowell of the Providence Foundation. Now, we're also going to Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown for those who want to do that trip. That's September 17th through the 20th. So those are two separate trips. You can do one or you can do both. We'd love to have you and your family. For more information, go to spiritualheritagetours.com. That's spiritualheritagetours.com. Space is filling up. Hope to see you in September.
I'm a widow. I've worked for a bank for 31 years, and I've been retired now for 10 years.
Myrtle Norris comments on her experience with the AFA Foundation.
I had a lot of financial questions, and Dan Celia was, he answered my questions, and he helped me with a lot of decisions that I made. And then the charitable gift came up, and he explained that to me. I decided to get it, and I'm sure glad I did, because I know now that money is in a place that I know God wants it to be, and also get my monthly income from it. I believe in the AFA and what they're doing, because they're working for us.
Learn how the AFA Foundation can work for you. You can contact the AFA Foundation through Facebook, on our website, afafoundation.net, or call us at 800-326-4543, extension 345. Thank you for supporting the American Family Association.
This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson. Psalm 2, why do the nations rage and the people plot in vain against him? Nations rage? Yeah, the answer's on display every day. Take London. 5 people were killed, as many as 40 were wounded. It began when a jihadist car started mowing down pedestrians on Westminster Bridge. Nations rage because man is in total rebellion to the creator of the universe, whom they do not acknowledge. We can safely include most of the mainstream media in that. The media of our nation want to confuse us, make us feel stupid, conspiratorial, and inept, as daily they fail us by not telling the truth, echoing the lie and the distortions of the governments of this world. Truth tellers out there, keep on. Don't lose heart. Keep whistleblowing. Many rely upon you and me to help them know the difference between the truth and the lie. This is a Decency Minute. Find us at AmericanDecency.org. I'm Bill Johnson.
Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at T Perkins. Let me remind you, coming up in July, July 29th through August the 5th, if you'd like to take a cruise with us to Alaska, find out more, go to TonyPerkins.com. Going to have a great time. Got a great lineup of guests that are going to be with us. Find out more, go to TonyPerkins.com. All right, last year, in response to the city of Charlotte adopting a policy that forced private and public entities to adopt bathroom policies and shower policies that would allow anybody to choose what facility they wanted to use. The North Carolina legislature passed HB 2, which would have, well, it exercised the constitutional authority of the state to say that jurisdictions, cities, counties, cannot adopt these policies that are inconsistent with state policy. And they basically laid out that men are to use men's rooms, women to use women's rooms in all government bathrooms, right? Private entities, you know, free to do whatever they wanted. That includes places like Target, who did, in fact, adopt policies to allow anyone to use changing rooms, and it's been disastrous for them. Lost millions of dollars in value, and not to mention seen their stock just dive. But the today, the legislature, yielding to the NCAA and their threats and the corporate bullies, saying that they needed to repeal HB 2, actually took a step back. And what I would say is it's HB 2 light. It really doesn't do what the left wants. It does not allow Charlotte to reestablish its bathroom policies. It says that this issue is going to basically be put on hold until December of 2020. And the evidence of the fact that it, well, it's always instructive to watch how the agitators on the left respond to this. They were the ones that are agitating for a repeal. They got a repeal, and guess what? They are livid. Absolutely livid. Here to talk about it is former governor of North Carolina, Governor Pat McCrory. Governor, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks very much, Congressman. Kind of great seeing you again or hearing from you. And very interesting day in North Carolina. The good news is this. The HRC lost a battle. And with their resources and power and money, and they're trying to get some other corporations to help support them in their the battle that they lost, the usual players out in California. The fact of the matter is they did not get a full repeal of HB 2. They do not have the power at the local level to change the definition of gender, which is really what it comes down to. Are we going to change the definition of gender or not? And that shouldn't be a decision made by a mayor or a governor or by the NCAA.
Right.
That's not their right to make the decision. This is going to end up going to the Supreme Court, and hopefully with a new Supreme Court justice that's been nominated by President Trump, there will be a ruling in which we keep the definition of gender as we've been using in the 1964 Civil Rights Act for generations. And I think that's where this is going to be resolved. We also have to compliment President Trump for overriding the Obama order on Title VII and Title IX, which was threatening our corporations and businesses with over 15 people and threatening our universities with loss of federal money unless they conform to changing the definition of gender to gender expression or gender identity, because that's really what this whole argument's about, which the media will not explain.
Right.
And where I failed to explain, I mean, because the media, I'm even watching CNN on the screen right now, and they're misleading the public about what HB 2 actually did. And that's what the current governor is going to try to do, too, is to put a spin on this as though this is a victory, when even the far left knows this is not a victory for them, and I think they're letting the current governor know this, and that they put them in office.
Well, what's interesting, I think we see a division now between the LGBTQ agitators and the businesses that they've had on strings like a puppet, that apparently business waking up to the fact that they could never satisfy this constituency.
You can't satisfy the extreme left. You can't do it. They'll never be satisfied. They're raising money off this issue. And the current governor got elected on this issue, many say, and raised millions of dollars on this issue, but he will find out that he cannot satisfy them. And so that's what's said. They're protesting. The same protesters that protested me are now protesting the current governor, but he's trying to put a spin on it that it'll be interesting if it works or not. But again, I've been saying to you and to many others that this is going to have to be resolved either by the U.S. Congress or by the Supreme Court. Thankfully, Donald Trump won the election, where the Supreme Court now will hopefully be more conservative and not let a Justice Department run all over small businesses and our universities, where we've lost a lot of control as it is. So.
Well, Governor, as I see the legislation, if I read, I mean, it's pretty simple, straightforward. It's a half page. The effect of it, you know, it's not that it's basically it does not allow Charlotte to do what it did that started this whole thing. So that remains the same. Men will use men's rooms and women's will use women's rooms and showers.
As we always did.
Right, right. But back in normal times.
Most people don't realize I signed HB 2. It was really in reaction to Charlotte, which most people don't know this, but Charlotte passed an ordinance which threatened a 30-day jail sentence and a $500 fine for any private sector company which didn't recognize gender identity or gender expression as the new definition as it relates to our public facility, to their own public facility.
Right.
And I don't think the business community ever understood that either. And that's wrong. That's government overreach at any level.
And these businesses were free to adopt that policy under HB 2 if they wanted to, but they never did.
That's correct. And most people think we passed the bathroom rule.
No.
No, the city passed the bathroom rule, which was a liberal interpretation of gender. And that's the, you know, most people say Governor McCrory signed a bathroom bill. That's
you overturned the bathroom.
90% false. It only applied to our schools and universities.
Right.
And our highway rest stops and government buildings. But you wouldn't know that by watching CNN
You mean fake news. Fake news, that's right. Hey, Governor, got to leave it there. We're out of time, up against the break. As always, great to talk with you. We'll be tracking this, and we'll talk to you soon. All right, folks, stick around. We're going to talk about what the state of Illinois wants to do to pastors. That's next here on Washington Watch.
making the most of your money. Here's Dan Celia.
We got a little bit of news on fourth quarter GDP. That came out. Looks like it came in at 2.1%. Some were expecting anywhere from 1.8% to 2%. I didn't see too many analysts expecting 2.1%. I said it should easily be 2%. I felt like this may be the year, 2016, might be the year that President Obama actually can say he stopped his seven-year run of less than 2% GDP growth, which is unprecedented, but that's already done. Maybe he gets 1 year out of eight where we get a whopping 2 or 2.1% GDP growth. Asia markets are dropping primarily on oil, yet oil is maintaining, this entire week has maintained its strength. So it's very interesting because the inventory numbers on crude oil were not good. They were up once again, but they're banking on this idea that inventory numbers on distilled products are down so much that they're going to draw dramatically on those crude oil inventories. That remains to be seen. I don't think it's going to happen. How about Mahindra? Mahindra is a tractor company out of India that is the number one tractor manufacturer in the world, and they have joined forces with some others, including U.S. car manufacturers, with plans on putting electric cars in China, India, and the U.S. Apparently, they've got a lot of power, might, marketing behind them, along with a lot of money. So someday, you may be driving a Mahindra electric car. We'll have to see.
Want to hear more financial advice from Dan Celia? Then look for his podcast when you visit the website afr.net.
This is Washington Watch. Glad to have you along on this Thursday afternoon. I didn't get a chance to fit this in as we were there with the governor. In its effect, this bill doesn't do a whole lot. It does, you know, I think it was ill-conceived. It wasn't needed. It's a reflection of spineless legislators. That's the way I see it. But in the effect, it doesn't change anything. And that's why the left's so mad, because they wanted a deal that would allow Charlotte and other liberal jurisdictions to put these redefinition of gender policies into place, and it didn't work for them, and that's a problem. That's what they the only thing, and when you talk about compromise, there's no compromise with them, and that's what the governor said. To them, the only thing that will satisfy them is our absolute and total surrender. That's the only compromise they want to hear about. The problem I have with this is that legislators are signaling that they will yield their authority and responsibility to the courts. It's not up to the courts to decide. This is a public policy and a public safety issue. It's time for these legislators to man up and take the responsibility they've been given. This is how they sidestep tough issues. And I see it. And none of these who voted for this should ever whine again about activist courts, okay? Because they just capitulated to the courts. That's what really bothers me about this. It's not the immediate effect of this bill. All right. If passed, a new bill in Illinois would force pastors to undergo domestic violence recognition training. Now, this would require within a year of them taking a post in ministry, they'd have to have this training, and every 5 years, they would have to have a refresher course. Now, while on the surface, it may appear well-intentioned, our next guest believes it is a misguided attempt to attack the widespread and grievous problems of domestic violence, and it breaches the wall of separation between a church and state that we hear about so much. Joining us now is David Smith, Executive Director of the Illinois Family Institute. David, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hello, Tony. Thanks for having me on.
I know you're actually in a meeting on this issue right now. What's the latest update on it?
Well, the good news is we put out an alert to our membership, our email readers, 2 days ago, and thousands of people have responded. As a result, my lobbyist talked to me this morning and said the sponsor of the bill is not moving it forward. She heard loud and clear the concerns, and instead she's going to put a resolution encouraging pastors to get training, not mandating training.
I mean, and that's...
This is a huge victory.
Yes.
This is a huge victory.
Right. It absolutely is, and I commend you, David, in the Illinois Family Institute for being on top of this, but this would set a very dangerous precedent of basically saying that pastors have to be trained by the government and submit to this training. What was the penalty? What was she proposing?
The gender issue, the gender confusion issue. What if our lawmakers in Springfield decided, well, pastors should be trained in sensitivity towards the transgender and the other 58 genders that are out there, and how to respond to that, even though biblically we know God's word says that he made them male and female.
Right.
There's only
two.
So
now, what was the penalty? Was there a penalty that was proposed for violation?
There was no penalty, no. But it was just the mandate. And, of course, that would come in later. They would come in with something to put teeth into it later.
Well, again, I congratulate
you. It would also give... bureaucrats the reason to come knock on the door and say, well, let's go over your files. Let's go see what you're doing. Let's look over your shoulder to see if you're complying with the state mandates.
Right. And this runs totally counter to what we're trying to do here in Washington with the repeal of the so-called Johnson Amendment to get the leash of government off of pastors and churches. There in Illinois, officials wanting to put an even shorter leash on these pastors.
That's right. Well, ironically, Tony, last session, they passed a similar bill for hairdressers. So anyone who's in the hairdressing business in Illinois now has to get training to recognize domestic abuse. So they thought, well, let's extend it one little bit more to the pastors and clergy members, which would have included, by the way, elders and deacons and maybe even Sunday school teachers.
Yeah, I've dealt with legislation like this before back when I was in office on mandatory reporting laws that drew pastors in, which breached the confidentiality of a pastor and his parishioners. David, thanks so much for joining us. Again, commend you on a great job in stopping this at the, as we would say, or as Barney Fife would say, nipping it in the bud. Thank you, David.
Well, and that's thanks to the people who took the time to make the phone calls and send emails to the lawmakers. So thank you, sir.
All right. Thanks so much for joining us. Find out more about David and the work that he does at the Illinois Family Institute. Go to TonyPerkins.com. Follow the links over. By the way, speaking of pastors, coming up in May 24th through the 26th, we have our Watchmen on the Wall conference. It's a briefing for pastors only here in Washington, D.C. We still have some slots available. This is basically underwritten by the Family Research Council. A small registration fee of $2.99. Everything's covered. Room for two nights, your meals. Only thing you got to do is get here. And we've got a great lineup of speakers to help you understand what's at stake in our nation, the window of opportunity we have, and what you can do to seize it. To find out more about how you can be a part of the Watchmen on the Wall Network and be a part of our briefing this year, May 24th through the 26th, go to TonyPerkins.com. All right, when we come back, we're going to be going to the phone lines to see what's on your mind. That's coming up next here on Washington Watch. Don't go away. Hello, this is Tony Perkins, President of the Family Research Council, inviting you to join me, my wife, Luana, along with General Jerry Boykin and other special guests on our first ever Free to Believe Alaska cruise from July 29th to August the 5th. We'll sail from Seattle on Holland America's luxurious MS Yuridam, known for impeccable five-star service and incomparable cuisine. Some of the most breathtaking beauty in God's creation will surround you as you rest, relax, and worship. You'll witness stunning wildlife and the majestic scenery of Glacier Bay and relive Gold Rush history and classic frontier towns. And you'll hear the latest updates from Washington on the new administration and Congress. Come fellowship with other like-minded believers and journey with us on a vacation that will enrich your body, mind, and soul. For more information, call 844-872-5155 or visit TonyPerkins.com. Don't miss out. The number of cabins is limited. Again, that's 844-872-5155 or TonyPerkins.com.
consider serving with Friendships. It's an all-volunteer ministry providing aid to disaster victims, refugees, and the impoverished here at home and around the world. We're now taking applications. If you're available to serve without pay, you can be part of the crew reaching out to help people in need. Check it out at friendships.org or call 337-433-5022.
Join Norman Geisler, Richard Land, Michael Brown, Frank Turek, and others for Southern Evangelical Seminary's National Conference on Christian Apologetics. It's October 13th and 14th in Charlotte, North Carolina. Enjoy informative talks, a live debate, and a dialogue with Ken Ham from Answers in Genesis. Plus, there's the premiere of the American Family Association documentary, The God Who Speaks. Register by May 1st and receive a special gift. Visit ses.edu for details.
8 Days of Hope 13 is headed to Lafayette, Louisiana, June 4th to June 11th. Hi, I'm Steve Tiber with 8 Days of Hope. 8 Days of Hope is a faith-based ministry. We've gone all over the country to help families rebuild after natural disasters. We've helped almost 1,800 families rebuild their homes, sometimes from the ground up. Lafayette, Louisiana, and the whole state of Louisiana got hit by epic flooding last year in August. Almost 25 inches of rain fell, and almost $20 billion of damage was done. Literally 140,000 homes flooded. Think about that, 140,000 families waiting for somebody to be a glimpse of Jesus. You can be a skilled professional, or you can be somebody like me who's less skilled but wants to give back. Go to 8daysofhope.com. We provide the food and lodging, and you can learn a lot more about the ministry. And we can't wait to see you in Lafayette, Louisiana, June 4th to June 11th. For more information, go to 8daysofhope.com.
This is Washington Watch, the website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at TPerkins. All right, I want to talk a little bit about this HB2, the what I would call HB2 Lite, that replaced HB2. Disappointing, no doubt. Disappointing, but because it shows that these lawmakers, even though the polling is overwhelming, that the citizens of North Carolina prefer the privacy that HB2 afforded and the security and the safety. But what I really want to focus on is what this reveals about the left, the agitators who have been agitating from the beginning to repeal this. I mean, they've been using the NCAA, they've been using the business community, just unrelenting. Well, listen to what some of them had to say. I mean, national groups from the Human Rights Campaign to the ACLU to the NAACP, even Planned Parenthood, used social media to warn the repeal supporters. I mean, those that were doing their bidding. In fact, Human Rights Campaign's Chad Griffin was furious. He said, "This deal does not repeal HB2. It's simply another version of HB2 dressed up in a way desperate lawmakers hope will save state's economy," calling it a kiss of death. He let it be known that there will, quote, "be political consequences for those who vote yes, Dems and Republicans," end quote. Now, the ACLU was just as upset. In a tweet to the sports association responsible for the last-minute legislating, they posted, "Hey, NCAA, North Carolina's compromise bill doesn't repeal HB2. We're not okay with compromising human rights, and you shouldn't be either," end quote. Equality North Carolina, the state's LGBT beehive of activity, used even stronger language, posting that they had nothing but, quote, "heartfelt disdain for lawmakers who put the bill on the table." Quote, "This proposal is a train wreck that would double down on anti-LGBTQ, XYZ, discrimination. Now, North Carolinians want a clean repeal of HB2, and we urge our allies not to sell us out." Look, what this shows, what this makes very, very clear, is that all this talk about compromise, about tolerance, you know what? It rings hollow. The only tolerance they want, I guess I should say their definition of tolerance, is total, absolute surrender by those who oppose their radical agenda. And let me tell you what, folks, not going to happen. As long as there are sane people in America, we talked about this yesterday, I'm convinced that there are sane people in America, and people who understand that there is transcendent truth, that there is a God, and as David Smith was just talking about, that God created us, and he created two genders, male and female. And until the rapture occurs, there's going to be people here that clearly understand that and are willing to stand for that. And so there is not going to be this absolute total surrender of the culture and the country to the left. And so they'll never be satisfied. They're insatiable. And all they want is to subjugate the rest of the culture to their twisted understanding of human sexuality. It's not going to happen. So anyway, I don't know. What do you think? What does this show about the left, these agitators, based upon their response? I'd like to hear from some of you in North Carolina what you think about your legislators today and what they did. 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. Especially I'd like to hear from those of you in North Carolina. Your thoughts on what took place in your state today. And again, I want to be very clear. The effect of this is it's not going to really change a whole lot right now. Now, I my problem with it is it shows that a lot of these elected officials are spineless, and they're abdicating their responsibility to govern as they were elected to do. They're tossing this to – they're yielding to the courts now – because, and this was a part of the discussion that was taking place, and I was talking to those involved in the process beginning early this morning, they were saying, well, we'll let the courts, there's a case in the Fourth Circuit that Governor McCrory made reference to, and it goes back to the 1974 Civil Rights Act, which, you know, says that there shall not be discrimination based upon sex. Well, what started all of this was the Obama administration redefining sex to include gender identity and everything else. And so that's what they're saying. Well, the court will decide and that'll settle it. No. I mean, yes, they might decide what the 1974 Civil Rights Act said, but it's still incumbent upon elected leaders, when there is a threat and a risk to the citizens of their state, to take action. And that's why I commend Governor McCrory and Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest, who took the initial steps to do this last year, and why I commend Dan Patrick in Texas for getting ahead of this and addressing it in Texas. Leadership is what we need. Courageous leadership. Courage is in such short supply in America today, in our culture in general. And it's not just with politicians, it's with pastors and it's with people in the pews. I mean, people are afraid. And you cannot, I hope you hear me now, I'm trying to be instructive, but it really, really infuriates me when I see cowardice is just something I don't tolerate well. Not when I see the sacrifice that people have made to give us the freedoms we have, and we're afraid because of somebody might tweet something about us, might say something about us. Well, here is something, and I'm speaking only to Christians, so if you're not a Christian, don't listen. We are told that we are to have a reverence for God and not a fear of man. I'm going to tell you, you cannot fear man and revere God. Two. You can only do one or the other. And I'm going to tell you, if you live in fear of man, it is a snare. The scripture says that. It will be a snare for you. Like a trapped animal who cannot find its freedom. That is what happens when you fear man. Rather have a reverence for God and live in freedom, regardless of what might be said. Okay. 866-372-7234. Let's go to North Carolina where April is on the line. April, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, Tony. Just wanted to say that just like in Washington, our North Carolina legislators played pussyfoot with special interests, and everyone lost. And I just think that just in Washington, they always play the special interest, and everyone loses. The voters lose, and they lost.
Well, and I hope that voters are taking notice of this, and they plan to respond. Again, the effect in the short term is not, I mean, it basically is status quo. But again, I think when you're absolutely right, when these special interest groups are agitating and being used, really the NCAA and, you know, these various corporations, American Airlines and PayPal, basically puppets on a string for the LGBT agitators. And what they're going to find out is they're never satisfied. They're going to continue to demand more. And you need leaders that will stand up and do what is in the best interest of the people of the state. And that's what happened last year when the legislature adopted HB2. April, thanks so much for calling. Appreciate you listening. Let's go to Texas, where Carol is on the line. Carol, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. It's Thankful Thursday. How are you?
It is Thankful Thursday, and I am thankful it's Thursday. Tony, I have two comments. The left will never, ever, ever stop agitating, and especially as well-funded as they are. You know, a lot of the protests and things we're seeing are actually being funded, and I believe George Soros has a hand in some of that. And the other is, I think I heard you ask a question either yesterday or sometime earlier in the week, is, did you ever think 10 years ago that you would be seeing the things that you're seeing now? I read a book written by Dr. David Jeremiah called Invasion of Other God. And in this book, he talked about the New Age agenda, and the entire agenda was, get the children. Once you get the children, you have the country, you have the nation, because those children will grow up into adults mm-hmm. who will then also be godless and have no reverence for God. And that is what we're seeing.
Yeah, it's going to the spigot. It's going to the source. And that's what they're doing. They're going to these kids at the very beginning. And in fact, I didn't talk about it this week. I had some articles I wanted to talk about, but we've had so much happening this week. And by the way, Carol, I got your email. Thank you for that email. I intended to respond to you. I agree with what you said and appreciate you, as always, encouraging our staff here at Washington Watch. There was some, actually, North Carolina in the Charlotte-Mecklenburg School District, a first grade book that the parents got up in arms about transgenders, and they brought in another one, and I don't have it in front of me, but it was about a red crayon, but it wasn't actually a red one. It thought it was blue, and even though it was red, it said it was blue. And it's this whole thing about defining who you are, defining your gender. It's insanity. But if you can get kids at first grade, kindergarten, well, you're absolutely right. Then you can have them going forward. You program them. And that's why parents, you need to be so careful about what your children are being taught in school. And I know many do not have other alternatives than the public schools. But I would not want to be in a position when you stand before God and give an account. And we're all going to give an account for everything we've done. I don't think God is going to be satisfied with the excuse, why didn't you raise your children to walk in the ways, my ways? And you say, well, I just didn't have the ability. I couldn't afford private school. I didn't want to quit work and homeschool them. I sent them to the public school. I'm not trying to put a guilt trip on anybody, but you can delegate the authority to teach your kids, but you cannot delegate the responsibility. That's yours as a parent. Train up a child in the way that they should go. And that is our responsibility as parents, and we will ultimately be held accountable for that. Now, some may live in good, most of our listeners in rural areas of the country live in pretty good school districts. You need to still be involved. Again, this is another reason why we talked about yesterday. You should run for office, run for the school board, and make sure that, the kids are not being indoctrinated with this stuff. We cannot wash our hands from, this or retreat from it. All right, I'm going to try to work another call here. Let's go to Tracy in Texas. Tracy, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, thank you. I just wanted to say I was a little shocked about what you were talking about today when I turned the station on, because I thought North Carolina had it. And but I am a proud, God-fearing, deplorable rebel, and I will stand next to you, and I will rebel, because I'm not going to give in to these lies. Because my father is not the father of lies. He's the father of truth.
Amen. Well, you can stand with the lieutenant governor there in Texas, who is trying to get a bill that very similar to now what North Carolina has. It would prohibit these local jurisdictions from adopting these crazy bathroom bills. It's passed through the Senate, waiting for the House Speaker to move it forward or allow a vote to take place in the House. So I'd encourage you to call the House Speaker there, House Speaker Strauss, and encourage him to move on it, because I think the support is in the House for this bill. But Tracy, thanks so much for calling. Appreciate you listening. And again, folks, we have a responsibility to speak truth even when that truth is not welcomed. And when we have lawmakers, legislators, leaders who compromise, you know, we need to address it. And so if you live in North Carolina, I would certainly encourage you to look to see where your legislator came down, your senator, your member of the House, where they came down on this issue. And if they voted for it, they have no right, zero right to complain about activist judges and special interest groups, because they capitulated, they surrendered, they ran up a white flag to the NCAA and to essentially activist courts. They tossed this to the courts and said, well, we'll wait to see what the courts decide. That's not the role of the courts to decide public policy. Now, I know that they will decide what is in the 1974 Civil Rights Act because of Obama trying to twist it. But that doesn't mean that they have to yield to that. They did the right thing last year. But because of the pressure politically, they yielded. And again, what's almost comical is that they're finding out that they cannot satisfy these agitators on the left. It's like they learned the hard way. All right, folks. Sorry I didn't get to all the calls, but thanks so much for listening in today and being a part of the Washington Watch audience. To find out more about how you can be involved, go to TonyPerkins.com. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul, found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and you've taken your stand, don't repeal, just keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.